listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
Welcome back, I'm Riley Cote. This week, as a Christmas special, we're going to share some of our favorite stories of 2021. First, we're going to start off with the ultimate winner. This guy is a former All-Star, former captain, Memorial Cup winner, Calder Cup trophy winner, World Junior gold medalist, Olympic gold medalist, and two-time Stanley Cup winner, Mike Richards.
To talk about moving on with the Flyers and then your time in Philly as a Flyer and then eventually being the captain of the Flyers. I mean, you know, it's a unique city. Obviously, they're hard on their players. Win, lose, or draw, they're expecting just, you know, some grunt work and, you know, honest effort. Like, just talk about your time in Philly as a player and as a, just as a Flyer.
Yeah, it was awesome. I loved it in Philly. I always look forward to getting back to the season. We had good teams, really, other than the second year. The second year, we were terrible.
worst year in Flyers history, to be exact. Yeah. Year 40.
We were out of it by, like, American Thanksgiving.
It was not going well.
But other than that year, it was awesome.
Yeah.
How crazy it is that we were that bad a second year, and then the next year we lost out to Pitt
in the conference final.
Yeah. Like, what the turnaround with Hartsey, Kimo, Danny, like a bunch of guys coming in, but
it was
insane how quick of a turnaround that was. But it was always good. The Flyers, you know, I got nothing bad to say about them ever. Like, Mr. Schneider was incredible to me. Just the fact of getting to know him a little bit and just how awesome of a person he was. He'd go to offer tickets to the 76ers games, and that was so much fun going there with him. And then just the crowds there, obviously, were like a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon against either the Rangers or Pitt. When they sung God Bless America, like, that would just, man, make the hair on your neck stand up every time.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah. Even to this day, anytime I hear that song, it's literally, I still get goosebumps just from hearing that. So yeah, it was fun. We had a bunch of good teams. Still, probably one of the biggest disappointments of my career was losing to Chicago in the finals that year. I still think if Ray Emery didn't get hurt that year, the late great, I think we would have won the cup that year. But it is what it is. It was a pretty cool experience to see how amazing that city was and how much they were behind us.
Richie, like, to me, you were the perfect captain in my eyes. I know, Riles, we've talked about this before. Like, maybe not the loudest, you know, losing your shit in the locker room, which I think actually is a good thing. You're calm, but no one could argue the way you played the game on the ice. You're a captain, man. No matter what you want to say, you're one of the greatest captains I've been around. And, you know, pretty young when you get named a captain. And in Philadelphia, it's a tough city, like we just talked about. But, you know, what were your thoughts about it? Like,
I remember being a little bit nervous about it. I do remember like Homer and Johnny and I all had a meeting, and I remember saying, like, if this is your, like, if this is what you want right now, then I'll be the captain. But if it's like something that, like, you're giving it to me now because you have no one else, or if you're giving it to me now because you think in a few years, excuse me, I'm going to be the captain. Like, if it's now what you want, then obviously I'm going to accept and I'll do the best job I can. And they were both like extremely like dead set that like, this is what they wanted now. And that gave me a lot of confidence, to accept it and take it. And I think that from that point on, it just gave me a lot of confidence that what I was doing was fine and I didn't have to change anything. Or, and then, like I said before, you kind of just like pick things up. The year before, Jason Smith was our captain, and like, he was, to me, what a captain should be: stuck up for his teammates. He never complained about anything. He just kind of went about his business, and that's kind of what I tried to do too.
Rick Bone, I'm not sure if you have watched a lot of hockey yet. I know usually you tune in more during the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, but were you able, did you happen to see Jake Voracek's interview?
Yeah, I did.
Were there any times you just wanted to say that? Something like that.
I just love how you could tell he was trying to bottle it up, but he couldn't. You know, when he's like, I'm not even going to answer the question. And then he started answering the question, yeah. But then he had it too bottled up. He just couldn't. Yeah. He's like, weasel.
He is one person, and it's pretty tough to bottle that man up.
Yeah. You know, it is what it is. I mean, sometimes you just can't hold it in. And that was one of those cases. And then you probably should. Sometimes you just have to let it fly. So, I saw that and I just started laughing because I've definitely felt that a little bit. Probably no outbursts like that. I probably did a little bit better job holding it in, but
oh man,
sometimes it's needed to be said.
Yeah, right. Keep them accountable too.
That's
exactly what he was trying to do, I think. Exactly.
I think he did.
Yeah, I think he did.
Richie, one of the things that I've always thought about, and Riley and I have talked about it before, we had that run to the Stanley Cup, which, I mean, for me personally, that was one of the best years I've ever had in hockey. We had the outdoor game in Boston. Unfortunately, we lost that one in OT, but it's still what an experience it was, man. I mean, Fenway, it snowed a bit. It was just so cool. And then the Olympics, which we didn't bring up yet, where you won again. The gold medal, stripping this young fella here of a gold medal. But no, seriously, it was an awesome, that 2 weeks was crazy. And I mean, God, I just had so much fun anyway. And it was cool because I couldn't be with you a lot, but we did see each other almost daily. And I did get to share a little bit of it with you, and watching you win was cool. And Prongs too. Even though I was heartbroken, don't worry about it, Rick Bone. But seriously, what I was going to say was, we go from that year, you know, then we lose in the finals. And like you said, we were kind of banged up, which I'm sure they were too.
Yeah.
We were missing Razor. I thought Lates and Boosh did a hell of a job getting us there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
One of another. But at the same time, like you said, the late great Ray Ray, man, he was something else. But the next year is what I was going to get to. We've got a good team again. We go into the playoffs. We ended up winning in seven against Buff. Wow. Prongs was hurt the whole time, and Buffalo, they played well, man. I mean, you know, and they had Miller.
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't like they were an easy out, but we found a way. We were down. You guys were down 3-2. Big, I think Ville, you assisted Ville, I think, if I'm not mistaken, game six, and then we just pumped them at home. That place was going bananas.
JVR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the next round, again, I'm not saying we would have beat Boston. They went on to win the cup. They had a really good team, and they probably wanted to kill us from the year before.
Yeah.
Which we can get into that in a minute. But my point was, that team, even that year, the second year after the cup, like, I feel like dismantling that team, like, God, we were still young. Like, you guys were still, like, you know, mid-20s. Yeah. And looking back, if you just look at that team, it's like, holy cow, man. Like, that was a good, good hockey team and a close-knit group.
Yeah. Yeah, we – I always am so impressed with, like, say, when Pittsburgh repeated a few years ago, 16, 17, whatever, 17, 18, whatever it was. That next year is so tough after you go to the finals, especially losing. Like, it took me like 3-4 weeks just to like scrape myself off the couch. Cause you know, people think that like when you lose, you have so much motivation to get in the gym and do, you know, that, but when you put so much time and effort and your body is broken. And I just remember waking up that next day and I was so sore, so tired, and you just have nothing, you know, like you go through that long of a, I think, I forget the exact number, but between the NHL, the Olympics, and then going to the finals, I forget the exact number, but it was close to like 100 hockey games that year. And then you have a short summer, then you're literally right back at it. But yeah, I think Boston was just raring to go because we came back on them, whatever, 3-0-3, 3-love, whatever, however you say it, and come back and win in that series. And then they swept us. But I just remember everybody was just, by the end of that year after we went to the finals, everyone was beat up, tired. Yeah. Like, it's not easy. So to get back to your point about that young team, I remember being at a ball game with Peter, the president.
Peter Lukko.
Peter Lukko. And we actually got into that conversation about how we had such a young group of great hockey players and great people. And if we can keep this team together, is what we were saying, we could easily win in the next few years. Right. And we didn't win that year, but you know, I think sometimes when you want to win so much, you kind of like everything has to be right now. And so they traded Bobrovsky.
That's right.
And you know, obviously not a great trade, but they needed goaltending. So and they thought that was the best chance of winning, so they brought Breeze in. But just like from, what was it, conference finals, I think it was first or second round, we lost. And then finals, I think that was a 3-year stretch, something like that anyways. Yeah. But you could tell we were like just on the edge, you know, like you just kind of had to go through some bumps to get to where we wanted to go. And then right as we started feeling those bumps the 1 year of Boston sweeping us, and then it seemed like everything was just like starting to kind of pull apart. It was pretty disappointing, to be honest with you.
It really was. I think you know, even like I was a pigeon, I'm an equipment guy, but I just remember even the staff and us being like, what's that?
The best pigeon in the league.
Nonetheless, the pigeon. But just, you know, thinking like, dude, we're gonna do this, and then, you know, like next year or two, like, are you really could feel it. And then just the devastation of the mood, everything that happened after that.
Like, I kind of get it too, though. Like, Mr. Snyder, let's be honest, was getting older at that point, and he just wanted to win so bad,
right?
You know, where it just turned to, there was a few years of, you know, goaltending woes, and to get back, like, Leitz and Boosh did such an amazing job, but like Razor started the year as our number one goaltender. It is what it is, but he just wanted a goaltender so bad that I'm assuming that Mr. Snyder said something to Homer about do anything you can to do it. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, the team looks a lot different than what it did. So I get it. I get the whole business side of it. But to say that I wasn't disappointed and a little bit hurt about being traded, that'd be a lie. The funniest, maybe not interaction, but like everybody in Philly was always so awesome. And it, you know, like you said, there'd be a handful of guys, which there's a handful of guys for everything that are always a little bit of jerks. But it was during the playoffs. We were at Budokan eating dinner the night before a game. And I remember this guy literally getting mad at me that I was out eating, that I wasn't at home getting ready for the game. And I was like, I got to eat. Like,
hey, listen, Richie, he wanted it more than you.
Yeah, he did.
I'll never forget JVR did something at the Philadelphia Union way back. It was probably his rookie year, but he did an appearance there, and Jimmy Rollins was with him. So they were sitting there talking, and you know, JVR was obviously a young kid. Yeah. J-Roll was J-Roll. Yeah. And they got to talking about the fans, and he was like, yeah, it's great here. He goes, the only problem is there's some that think they actually want to win more than you do as the athlete. And that's what drives you nuts when they're like that. And you know,
it's like the 1 percentile.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah. I mean,
the 99% is awesome. Yeah. And you know, it's maybe a picture, which is the easiest thing in the world to do, but it's, that's a good way to put it. That 1% feels like they want to win more than us.
You guys are out there putting your balls on the line, doing everything you can, you know, and you should be eating a home cooked meal, Mike.
Yeah, you should be at home resting, getting ready for the game. Like, okay. But he was like, no joke, he was actually mad that I was there. But it was all good. I had a good time.
Now we're going to jump to episode 5 with one of the biggest beauties in the league, Jake Voracek. Jakey talked about how demanding things were during this time in Philly, including teammates and coaches, and how much he loved playing here.
There's a lot of emotions.
Exactly.
You get stuck in a zone for 2 minutes. You're dead tired. You can't breathe. You blocked a shot. You got hit, probably.
Yeah.
You know, that's the last thing you wanna do is to get yelled at from the
coach. Jake, fuck Jake.
Wake the fuck up.
Jake used to come back to the bench when I was with the team, and sometimes it, you know, have a long shift, he's tired. And it was so funny because Lappy used to come up to you and try to talk, and Jake would be like, let me fucking get my breath. So then it turned into Lappy would come and stand beside me. If Jake was sitting in front of me, he would wait. And then like 20 seconds go by, Jake would be like, what?
Yeah, right. You know, he knows it's coming.
Lappy would just stand there, wait on you, you know, like.
Yeah, we have so many good stories, you know, like that's sometimes during the game, some shit happens.
Oh yeah.
That's an emotional game. So funny, man, you know what I mean? Like so funny. Like we had me, Simmer, I remember, like, it was some, I don't know what year was that. Like, we were pretty demanding on our power play, right, in Philly. That's why I think we were so good, because we were demanding. If one power play didn't go well, all right, you started looking around, you're like, all right, guys, wake the fuck up.
Yeah.
The second power play step in and something got screwed, it was a battle, like, on the bench. Like,
oh, yeah.
Fuck you, G. Fuck you, Simmer. Simmer's bitching at us. Then fucking, I'm getting between them, and then I fucking, you know, telling Simmer to go fuck himself.
That's the truth, too,
and
man.
Simmer's telling me, fucking, let's go right now. I'm like, let's go. And it settles. We go out on the next power play, and they start zipping around. Yeah, and we come back, and we just, all right, that's the way to do it.
It's
and after the period, you come to the locker room, and we just laugh about it. You know what I mean?
It's one of those things, too, that you've seen around.
Oh, yeah.
When you guys would do that, I'd just be like, oh God, you know, what's going on? And then, like you say, you go out, you score a goal, and everybody's happy. But if we could have had like that stuff mic'd, just to go back later, you'd laugh your ass off.
Even with Chief, you know,
God.
My Chief was like, I grew as a player under him. Like, you know what I mean? I had a breakout seasons under him, 13, 14, 14, 15. And like the shit he said sometimes to like, oh my God, like I was... Seriously, like you couldn't go on the ice because you were laughing for so long.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Off the ice, he says something and he started laughing, and then it was your turn again. 2.5, 3 minutes left. and you just you jumped on the ice and you were still smiling, you know, like with Rafi. Remember with Raf?
Oh God,
so Raf was what? It was like 3-1, whatever, or clear cut 2-1, 3-2. I can't remember right now correctly. And somebody from the other team called for a drop. So Raf went. That was right by the bench. Raf went, but he just dropped it to him. Gone the other way, 2-1. Absolutely, you know, they didn't score. You know, Rafi's face like,
oh, man.
What was that? And then Chico was like, Rafa, are you fucking brain dead or so? And then all of them just started dying laughing.
And Rafi's laughing.
And Rafi's like, that was such a good memory, man. Like,
it's funny.
There's so much, so many little things that are happening, you know, it just makes you crack up. It's, it's unbelievable.
What's it been like? I mean, this is you're going into your 10th year with the Flyers now, and just the city of Philadelphia, and just adapting to the culture here, and you know, again, not many players get to play in one city for 10 years. Yeah. So you can talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, kind of. I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, fuck, it's my 10th year already here in Philly. That's pretty good.
You
gotta do something. You gotta do something right to stay here for such a long time. And yeah, it's like my second home. You know, like, I mean, if you are, I don't know, if you would be anywhere for 10 years, if you would call it a second home, but Philly is awesome. I mean, you know, you have four sports teams, you have a great restaurant, so you have just every time you play at home in front of the crowd, it's demanding 100%.
Yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah. But
I got losing.
They don't understand it.
I know.
With my shot from top of the circle, wrister, when there is no one in front of the net, there is no fucking way I'm scoring. Like, I don't know what would have to happen. The goalie pull his groin and just fall out of the net or something. I don't know. I'm not scoring. So, you know, with me holding the puck extra second and then finding the empty the open seam somewhere, back door or something, that's better option for me than just wrist it at the net. You know what I mean? Like, and everybody's trying to change me right now. Like, I still have some people, not like the fans, but overall from the hockey communities. You got to shoot more. You got to shoot more. I was like, guys, do you understand that you guys don't have the vision as I do?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Sure, like,
I see the ice completely differently than you.
Yeah, right.
And you standing in a completely different angle.
Right.
That I'm having a puck right now. Like, I see different things, right? Obviously.
Yeah,
when you go, my favorite thing is that when you go in 2-on-1, I would say when I'm going 2-on-1, 8 out of 10, I make the pass through the D, and if he hits it right, it's a goal, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but 2 out of 10 times, if you fuck up, they're like, oh, you should have shot it.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
should have shot it. Like, if I make that pass, which I usually do, like, it's a goal.
Right.
Like, shot it.
Yeah, right.
Of course, I should have shot it if I fucked up that.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's easy to say after
you know
the
what
fact,
I mean? Like,
right,
thanks for advice.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
It just, yeah, but it's fun. You know what I mean? It's fun to play here. It's fun to, you know, playing those home games. And, you know, because if you go, if the team goes and the people pushing
awesome.
And pushing you, and you can absolutely do things that you couldn't do in any other cities, I think.
Next up, Frank the Animal by Lois tells us how he got his historic nickname.
Speaking of the nickname The Animal, what is the storyline behind it? Nasty was giving me a little bit of a 101, your first year pro in Roanoke.
Yeah.
You have some substance behind it?
Dude, this is funny as shit. Like, I was like, I went to Roanoke and I was like, just like huge, man. I was like all juiced up, you know what I mean? Like,
no.
Just, it was terrible. It was real bad. And I can fucking skate. I was like, you know, so I get off the bus and the whole fucking team's like looking at me and I'm like, what are you fucking looking at? You know, like, and they're like, oh, and no one would say that. They're scared. Like, Mike James was our goalie. Me and him are real good buddies. You know, he's funny as shit. But so they put me to live with him. And he tells Roy Somers, like, no fucking way that I'm living with that guy. You know what I mean? We're like best friends now. But, you know, it's like, you know, long story short, we get out. I'm like, I can't fucking skate, man. My legs were seizing up. Like, you know, they were so big. I was like, fuck this. You know, I'm like, and he's like, well, you got to give it an effort. Just go out there. So I skate out to center ice and I line up. So I think we were playing like, what the fuck was it? Wheeling, West Virginia or something like that. So I line up.
Wheeling,
you know, then, you know, a slap shot league. They got 100 fighters. And the guy lines up beside me. And he's like looking at me, doesn't know how to take it. You know what I mean? And I'm like, what are you looking at? And he's like, nothing. And I'm like, so I fucking punched him. You know what I mean? And I'm like, all right. he goes down, he's bleeding all over the place, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? You know, man, the ref gives me, doesn't even get up. And I'm like, all right. So I skate to the penalty box. I'm sitting in there. Coach is shaking his head. And the other team's coach looks over and like, where in the fuck did you get that? And I'm just like, and they're just laughing. Roy's cracked. Roy was a great guy. He was funny as shit.
Yeah.
So he's laughing. I get out of the box. I come skating back across the ice, make my way back to the bench. And I'm like, I'm done, man. I'm not skating no more. Fuck this shit. And he's like, you got to try. You got to get in shape. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, okay. So I go cruising out there. I skate around. My legs start hurting. I'm like, I just stop, eh? And I'm like looking around. The guy skates by me. I tomahawk him. You know what I mean? And like, and he's like, he drops his gloves. And I punched him. I hit him right in the front of the helmet. His helmet fell off his head like two pieces. And I'm like, and I hurt my hand. I was like, fuck. And then he dives down, tries to turtle. I pick him up by the back of the shirt. And I got him up in the air and I'm fucking hitting him, you know, the typical Frankie shit.
Yeah.
He's like half dead. So I throw him on the ground. And I skate back to the box. And Roy's like, are you going to try and play? I'm like, no. Every time you put me on ice, I'm just going to fuck someone up. And he's like, okay, so I go out there again, and now I'm actually okay. I'm gonna try and play a little bit. So I get the puck and I'm skating. And I'm like, again, you know, I'm out of gas. I'm like, I'm out of gas. I'm like, so I go stand against the boards and hold the puck, and some idiot decides to run me, bounces right off of me. I look at him, turn around, grab him, one punch, and knock him out cold. And at that point, this fucking hillbilly, this big truck, they had a fishing pole with Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket, and they're flinging it over the boards and reeling it in, and I'm laughing, and he's like, this kid's a fucking animal. I went up to the, they had a bar, so I got tossed out of the game. I went up to the bar, and the owner was like Henry Brabham, just total, you know, like hillbilly oil tycoon, like loaded.
Yeah,
carries a big 45. He's crazy, you know. There'd be problems in the bar. He'd pull the gun out, put it to people's head. Don't make me kill you, son. Oh yeah, it was crazy. Oh. It was nuts, man. I seen some shit in Roanoke, man. That was funny.
I was kind of telling Riles about, I think you were telling me you drove a cab for a job too.
Oh
right?
My dad had a taxi business, you know what I mean? So it was great money. I mean, like, honestly, you know, because you're not paying. Usually you got to rent to work there and stuff like that. You pay the owner, you know what I mean? But my dad was like, yeah, go drive cab. It was fun, man. You fight a lot, you know. I fight every day. I used to drive taxi. I think that was like playing a hockey game. You just get fights easy, man. They get in your car all hammered up and you like have to get out of them, or they don't want to pay. And it was fun, man.
That's fun.
You got the green light again to just pound faces. Pay it for their taxi.
I'll tell you this one time. I'm driving cab and it's like maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like down on Sherbrooke, you know, in the hood there, Riles.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah, like really bad. And this guy comes out of one night. It was like, I can't remember what bar it was. So he gets in the fucking cab. He's got to be like 7 feet tall, man. Good fucking 350, 400 pounds. So he gets in the car. His head's turned sideways because he can't fit in the car. And his one side of his body's touching the door. The other side's touching me. And I'm like, holy fuck, look at the size of this big motherfucker. And I'm like, I hope he behaves. You know what I mean? It's like,
geez, hope he behaves.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God. So he goes, he says, pull in here. Like we go, it's like a $7 fare. You know what I mean? And he fucking pulls in this. He goes, pull in the alley. And I'm like, oh fuck, here we go, man. You know, and he's like, I'm not paying. And I'm like, yeah, well, hey, $7, man. It's like, yeah, have it. So then he's like, so he gets out of the car and he's like, fuck you. He's kind of losing it. And he walks around to the front. It's my old man's cab. And he takes his fist like Donkey Kong and whacks the hood. And I'm like, oh, now you have to fucking piss me off, eh? So I get out, I open the door. I'm like, what's your fucking problem? And he comes walking over, dude. I grab my dad's mace. I sprayed this motherfucker in the face and I beat it. I left him for dead. I kicked the living shit out of him. I was kicking him in the face and I'm like, oh, fuck, I think I killed him. So it's like 3 a.m, minus 40 outside. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. I leave him. I call my old man. He's like, I said, Dad, I fucking think I killed this fucker. He's like, were you sure? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, where? And I'm like, dude, I don't know. He goes, okay, come and get me. So if I could drive from fucking Sherbrooke all the way out to past the perimeter, like West St. Paul, which is like a good 35, 40 minutes. I grab my dad, we drive back, and here, like 40 minutes later, minus 40, there's some people in the alley trying to pick this fucking Godzilla up. You know, he's bleeding everywhere. And my dad's like, oh, he's alive. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Maybe in a coma, but he's
oh
alive.
My god.
Yeah, dude. Oh, they were dragging him out. There was like four people. Like, you need a crane to pick this motherfucker up, man.
On episode 28, the captain Claude Giroux joined us. G gave us some insight on the different coaches he played for in Philly.
G, I was gonna ask you, you've been here a while now, but five coaches, you've been through five different coaches, and they all have different things. I know you enjoyed Chief. I'm not saying he was your favorite, obviously, but I mean, because you had a good relationship, as far as I know, with all the coaches. We always kind of bring Chief up because he's been a guest on here, obviously. And I know there's more than a few times he make you laugh during the game. That's the funny thing about Chief. But yeah, like I said, you've had five coaches. You know, like, I don't want to say who's your favorite, but like, what did you like about, like, you know, Labby or Chief or Johnny Stevens, which, you know,
I got along well with all the coaches, and like you said, it's like everybody has their own way of coaching. And I mean, I don't really think of any of those coaches that were similar. I mean, you have John Steven, that's one guy that really pushed me, and he literally told me, if you're not the hardest working guy, you're not going to play for me. So what I did, I just started working harder than I was. So he was great. And then Lavi's intensity, he motivates the boys, get going. He, being obviously going out to the Stanley Cup Finals with him, it was awesome. He's he finds ways to get the players to play for each other and to make it feel like a family. And we've had some good years together for sure. Yeah. And then obviously Chief. Remember when I beat him arm wrestling?
Yes, that's what I was saying.
Oh, that was amazing.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I should have just retired right there.
Right, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so I beat him, and then he goes, okay, we're going again. And I'm like, God damn, okay. And then he beat me. I'm like, can we keep it even? Like, we're done.
Yeah,
he's all fired up.
No grudge match.
he would be fired up.
Awesome.
I liked in Philly, I was upset when Chief got fired, because obviously I've known him for basically my whole life and good buddy. You hate to see anybody lose their job, but Hack, I really liked Hack, and I don't, the people that, you know, it's like Riley, kind of like what you said, and we've talked about this before, but you know, well, he's too stoic on the bench. Well, you don't see him when he's not on the bench. You don't see him underneath and when he's pissed off.
Right.
And, you know, not all coaches are going to flip out, waving their arms and screaming and yelling. He's just a different kind of guy. But I really like Tack, and I know you like Tack too. Because
yeah.
I remember the day he had to go, and you know, you see him in the hallway there, and then he came down. And it was those things are tough to see. Yeah. But I really like Tack. I thought he was, you know, I thought he did a good job. And you know, get this new coach, got AV in there, he's got an unbelievable resume, and next year is going to be, you know, a good year. I really believe that.
Yeah, I do. I think so too. Going back to Hack, I think the passion he's got for the game, and his work ethic, I mean, every day he was going, and we're trying to figure out things, and my great coach, and obviously didn't end up great, but you know, we had some good years with him for sure.
Yeah.
Good man.
Really good man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of room for error in coaching pro sports. You know, you don't have much of an opportunity. If you don't win the first, you know, couple years, you know, you're rode out of town. But I didn't play for Hack, but I worked with him in preseason and stuff like that, and communicated with him. I really liked his attitude towards the game, and he communicated well, I thought. And I think he might have got a short end of the stick there, but that's just the way the game works. And you know, and then you said Nass there, you know, the whole presentation of how he is on the bench. And I think John Stevens, he got ripped on for that too, is that, you know, and I find it ironic because, you know, John, part of Johnny's message was just to like, to like maintain composure, right? Like, you don't want to, you don't want to show everybody that you're like the village idiot and you're like losing control. So like, I learned a lot from Johnny with that message of like, not like blowing a gasket every time something goes wrong and freaking out, because it's easy to do. And, you know, a hack, I think, was a similar way on the bench. And then you got Lavi in between. You know, Lavi's like pulling his hair out and up and down.
Between the boys, used to yell at me for giving him those pills. He'd start the game as soon as the puck dropped.
He's giving him 5-hour energies, 10-hour energies, pill. Yeah,
he didn't help. He drank 7 cups of black coffee from 3:30 to 5:30. Like, I don't know how you can even put that many in your body. And then he had the, not only did I get him those Red Bulls, but he had the Red Bull shots, a full Red Bull and just a little thing. And then he would ask me for one of those pills, which was just a GNC pill. It was a workout pill, but it got him over the top, and the puck would drop, and it was all over. He's red. I'm like, this guy's gonna drop.
Yeah, right. About to look nasty. Like, stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He was vowing it before the game even started. He was
come on, nasty. Like,
what are you doing here?
You gotta stop giving him those pills, man.
Do you remember with John Stevens, when he was coaching, we were at practice and we were doing morning skate, and everybody had we're doing breakouts, mandatory sauce. So everybody's doing sauce. And then at one point, John goes, okay, like, just blows the whistle, no more sauce. Tape to tape only, no more sauce. So Richie's line goes up and it goes D to D. He gets in the middle, goes to pass it, goes on his backhand, makes a backhand pass, and then Johnny just loses it. He's like, what is going on? Everybody's laughing, and just that kind of team we had, just losing.
Johnny's eye.
It was
our first year, and I'm just like, what is going on?
Yeah.
I listen to the coach.
Now we're going to throw it back to when Hall of Fame defenseman Chris Pronger joined us on episode 12, where he talked about his reputation as a dirty player.
Hey, Prongs, I was going to ask you, like, despite being known as like a skilled defenseman, would you ever consider yourself a dirty hockey player?
Sure. I mean, dirty's a, you know, there's a lot of gray areas involved. I would say I'd be willing to, you know, I want to win just like anybody else. And as big a target as I had on my back, I was going to make sure I took a pound of flesh out of anybody who came near me. So, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize that I had guys taking runs at me constantly. And, you know, yeah. And then you got to make sure that they know, okay, if you're going to do that, you're going to feel some pain. You know, you're not going to like it. So, you know, and then it's about taking a number and finding them when they're in an untoward position and sorry.
Yeah. Right.
I remember, Prongs, I'm sure you remember this. We were, it was after we had lost, it was the next season, and we're playing Chicago that week. And Prong says, hey, Nast, come here. Get me a new pair of elbow pads and cut the back off of them. I said, what? He's like, I want this thing to come right off my arm. You remember who you were going after?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and he got us in the game before we played him.
It was Burridge.
Oh, no way.
And he wanted a piece of this. He goes, I don't care if he says no, he's going to get it. So I cut the back piece of these elbow pads off for him, had him, and then he got hurt and he couldn't play. And I remember saying, hey, you're the luckiest dude in the world right now. He got a fuck in the face.
Oh,
is he even going to get something in the face from the beast?
Yeah, that's so good. Well, the only reason I asked you that was, you know, I know you play the game hard. I was kind of making a joke when I said that, but, you know, knowing that you had been suspended 8 times, but you played the game hard and, you know, you're an honest player, right? I mean, it was, I don't even think dirty was the word I should have used, but, you're greasy, you're hard nosed and everyone knew what they were getting when they played against you. And you established that. I think that's what you know, what tough, good players do, right? I mean, you know, you're creating space for yourself, you know, you're probably able to break the puck out a lot better since you're playing that way, right? I mean, you're giving yourself that extra space. And
you know, part of it was early on, and even prior to the NHL, I was always unpredictable, not knowing, you know, I might hit you, I might spear you, I might slash you, I might cross-check you. And keeping your opponent on edge and kind of leery of what you may do. You know, I think, you know, as opposed to dirty, unpredictable. You know,
unpredictable.
Like I might steal the puck from you. I might run you through the boards. I might, you know, cross-check you. I might, you know, stick you in the nuts. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, and half the time I didn't know.
Yeah. It was spontaneous, right?
It was just like, you know, what looked like it was going to, you know, at that split second.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Bang.
Yeah.
And it just happened.
Next up, we have another towering defenseman. Sam Moran joined us and talked about going from defenseman to forward and back to defense, along with his first NHL goal and his run-in with Brendan Lemieux.
I was going to ask you to walk us through going into last season in your mentality, because I know we had a conversation in the summertime. You had a meeting with Alain Vigneault, and there was an adjustment to your position and the whole bit. But to walk us through all that, because I know there was a lot of the question marks and, you know, changing the game plan up a little bit. And then it kind of worked out in your favor in the end.
Oh yeah, obviously. So all that worked out. I think it was in September. I was the only one in Philly, you know, kind of working hard, really working on the bike and stuff like this, sweating, just working hard. And Lappy, Yann Lapierre came, told me, say, hey, he wants to meet with you after your workout. And I was like, oh, okay, that's crazy. Like, coach wants to talk to me. I didn't know like, in my mind, he's like, I don't even know if he knows I'm still there, you know? Like, I'm just right. And I was like, okay. Like, and I went there, and he kind of explained me a little bit what happened during the bubble hockey. And they were trying to find that physical guy, but they can't really find it anywhere right now in the league. They're kind of pretty rare now. And he's like, yeah, I want you to maybe consider play forward for me and on the fourth line and see how it's going to go. I need a guy that can fight, obviously not fight, but just yet get a presence there, you know, and because obviously in the organization, we have no one even now, like I'm sure they're going to try to get some other guys, but something we need to get better at. And yeah. And as soon I was like, I was really shocked. I think I was like, man, I'm not doing that. What the hell is this? This kind of sucks. I'm a defensive defenseman, and I hate the other side of the blue, the red line. Like, but not I hate it, but like you know, like I just like offensively, like I know what to do as a D man, but I'm not a flashy guy for any means. I'm just like shoot the puck on net, give it the puck to goals, and let him do his stuff. Like that was my game plan, you know. Yeah. Defensively, obviously, I'm in my kitchen there, and I really like to be in the defensive side of the puck. But yeah, so I call my agent and see what he said. And my agent, Pat Brisson, obviously was like, man, like just the fact that an NHL coach tell you that he's willing to give you a shot, you need to take it. You need to try and need to have a good attitude and try to do it. And after that, I kind of like, yeah, I was like, yeah, he's kind of right. Talked to my parents a little bit. And obviously I make a couple of phone calls. I see a little bit the guys that have that role. And obviously Riles was on, I think Riles was one of the first one I called with Chris Stewart, you know, Chris Stewart, a really good guy. Mm-hmm. And Riles, I was like, and you told me that the same thing. I was like, Stewart told me the same thing. You just chip it. Like, you need to put the puck deep, finish your hit, go change. And that's it. And like, you know, like it's just, and that was a little bit the thing. And obviously for me, I knew I need to prove that I can be one of the toughest guys in the league, but in my head, I kind of knew it. I can do it. It's something I was really good with the Phantoms. And obviously I didn't do it in a long time, but I was just willing to do it. You know, like I know right now it's something I need to do. And yeah. And Riles gave me one of his coach that he had back then, and he was really good with me. I got a work with him in August again. I need to text him actually. And
Marco Perazzo.
Yeah, Marco Perazzo. Yeah, great guy. Right, he's so funny.
Riles, don't do that anymore.
Yeah, you were bigger back then. That's what I hear. I mean, I see picture too. Your neck was huge.
I was fat. I was a fat ass.
Yeah. Oh, you were tough, man. I mean, you coached me to Phantoms. You were freaking crazy, man. You're an event. Not crazy. You were awesome, but you were like fired up. I loved it. Oh, you're such a good coach. But you know, I call you and. Yeah, it is. But you give me some great advice, and I really appreciate that because obviously, Riles, you've been my coach, and I still think high of you and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Well, you made the right choice. I mean, you had a good attitude. You know, obviously, it didn't work out up front the way you know you had envisioned it, and there's probably some disappointment when you land up going back to the Phantoms. But you go back to the Phantoms on D, and you play very well, and you get the call, and now you're back up on D, and you look comfortable, you look ready to rock, and rock really solid, really.
That's a crazy story about it. That's like, so obviously, like, what happened? The only reason why I went back down is because there were so many injuries D back there, and with the Phantoms. So Chuck, after a game, he comes see me. He's like, "Hey, Sammy, like, there's ton of injured guys on D right now at the Phantoms. We need you to go back and play. I think Friedman was just get picked up in the waivers and stuff like this, you know?
Yeah.
And so they didn't have any D. So I go, I'm like, and as soon as they told me that, I was with Daniel Briere, actually, like Danny B, doing some extra stuff for him. And that was my last practice as a forward. And I was so happy, man, when they told me, just go, you need to go play some go play defense there. And my first game against Hershey, I was so happy, like in the warm up and stuff. You know, I was just like, man. And first shift, like I do a good first, you know, I just get a good first pass and all that stuff. And I had a great game that game. And I was like, man, I loved it. And I played another game against Hershey. And after that, I talked to Gordo a little bit and I told him, you know, like, I don't think I can do it anymore. I can't be a forward. And he's like, I think you should call Chuck. And that's what I did. I called Chuck and I told him what I was thinking, that kind of what I want to do. And he was like, obviously, he was okay with addition, but you're probably gonna stay in the Phantoms. And I was like, yeah, it's fine with me. Like, you know, I give it a try. And even my agent, I give it a try, and I just don't feel comfortable doing it. And all of a sudden, Philly struggle, and you get a call, and that was Scarry's first goal. And that was like only in like 2 or 3 weeks, you know, and I've been waiting for that opportunity all my life. Like, it was crazy, you know. Yeah, it goes so fast.
Yeah, that was awesome. We were, you know, every week we have we do our show here, and we have other things that we jump on with other people, and we were crying for Big Sam.
Crying. Calling this guy up.
Well, like we were ready, and we know you're ready because we both know you so well. But the best thing, that one of the things that we talked about, we did a post game one night. It might have been the night he scored, eh, Riggs?
Was it that night?
We did a post game, and you just, the whole game, not because you scored the goal, Sammy, but it was the way you played. You made it look easy. You got the puck. You made the pass. If you didn't have a pass, you got it out of the zone. Nothing's happening, but you're a presence that they need. You have to have a presence, and you bring that, which you know. And then to top it off, you score your first NHL goal. It gives me chills just because it was so great to see you finally get that. But just the way the team reacted, you could just tell, and we talked about it a lot. You could tell you're like a team favorite guy. Like, you're fun to have around, like I said before, but it was awesome to see that, you know, lofts came flying. I mean, they were literally jumping up and down like it was a damn soccer goal or something, but it was great. It was great. Like I just came off the couch. I know we were all talking about it, but that was just what a night, man.
Yeah. What a moment. Yeah. That was, oh my God, yeah, that was, I remember going to the bench, and actually, like, I was just on the ice when I score, and I go to the bench, and I just, I can't play anymore, man. I just can't play. And like Yosi was like, yeah, that's fine, bro. I was going to put Provi in the ice. It's fine. I was like, yeah, I can do it.
You bench yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm done. I'm done. I was like, yeah, I bench myself. Honestly, I did. I was like, I score. Like I had my strap was undone. I didn't have my gloves on me. I was like, so what's going on? It was so funny.
Did you watch the replay a few times?
Yeah, I watched. It's like, why my strap is undone? I have no gloves. I'm looking at the best Rangers. I'm chirping that Smith guy. I'm like, what is going on? They're like, I got no idea. I sit on the bench. I'm like, everyone is like, what the hell? I was like, Yosi, I'm done. I'm done. 4 minutes left in the game. Just put other guys on the ice. It was so funny, but you know, it was a great moment. And you know, I know the boys, like, oh my God, like my teammates are everything for me. And they're my best friends. And I think they went through the same, like they saw me grinding out in the gym. And obviously you saw it, Nasty, you were there.
Yeah.
And it was such a long road for me. And it was the best moment in my life by far. Like, you know, you get drafted, it's cool. You pay your first NHL goal, it's cool. But the way that happened to me was I was like, what is going on here? I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was like, man, I was ready to like, when I got, I was ready to stop playing because I was like, man, like my body just can't hold up anymore. It sucks, but just the way it is. And now I'm playing in NHL again, which was my dream when I was like, I decided to play hockey. I was pretty young, at 12 years old. Like, I was like, I'm going to be an NHL player. And it was just crazy, you know? Yeah.
That was so fun. It was so fun to watch, man. I wish I could have been there, but I got to see it. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, you're part of it, Nasty. You know it. I love you, buddy. Yeah.
I love you too, buddy.
Yeah. And leading up to your goal there, I think that the game before is when you pounded on Brendan Lemieux. But when you got called up, I think
the
Flyers were – I guess at a crossroads of their season, they were lacking that energy and that spirit. And then, you know, we had talked about it like on, you know, on the show and stuff about like the Flyers, like they need something, they need some sort of spark. And I was like, you know, when you got called up, I was like, this is it, man. Like, this is exactly what they needed. And then you had a couple of good games and then you pounded that Lemieux and then you got fined for it and you scored the next game. But then all of a sudden there was like this, it was just like a, you know, an added energy that was in the lineup that, you know, obviously you're one guy and these other guys have to be able to generate their own energy. But, you know, for that brief period, it seemed like, wow, it's like, you know, one guy could actually come in and make a significant difference as far as energy goes. So it was nice to see. And I think that was a testament to all your hard work and your attitude and everything you poured into it. But obviously it's a team game and, you know, that can only sustain itself so long. And then you have to have other elements that can help bring energy too, which I didn't think the team as a system didn't do a very good job towards the end of the season. But talk about that fight a little bit. What's that?
I'll go for it. We got a shit here.
I don't want to say
that. Yeah, go for it.
It was, but it I was going to say,
it's the way it is.
That fight with Lemieux, you know, I know the way it started and everything like that. But I love your attitude in that fight. Is you didn't give him a chance. You didn't give him a chance to make a decision, you know, because most of the times he would just like yap and then he would like skate away. But I know you got fined for it. It's probably not so much what you did. It was more the timing of it because it was like 4 minutes, maybe less. It was like a minute and a half in the game.
I think I took his hair and I called Pony on the ice.
Yeah.
I mean, I hated that guy.
Yeah. But I mean, think about how much space he got from that. Think about that. Not that you didn't have space before.
No.
You're 6'6", you know, and tough. And then, you know, you do something like that, you get a lot of street credit. Yeah. And you play the Rangers, I think, the next game. And, you know, they obviously have a lot of respect.
What happened on this stiff is like, I mean, obviously, I wanted to fight him. Him and Smith, like, those two, man, I hate such pretenders. It's insane. Like, you know what? Pretenders are the worst. Like, they're like, kind of like, you know, that's what they are, pretenders. It's just the way it is. But so Lemieux is just yapping at her bench like crazy. I just finished my shift and like Coos look at me and say, hey, Lemieux is fucking yapping. Like, can you do something? And I'm just like, I'm on the other side of the bench. I'm a D-man. So like, you know, it's not close to their bench. And I'm just like running like, you know, from the D to the forward side, like I was running and like, I don't know what I was saying. I was just shaking. Like I was like, sit down, man. I gotta kill you. Like just, like, I think it was chirping lots or something. Yeah. Obviously I love lots. So you don't chirp lots. Yeah. But anyway, I was just freaking out. Like, you know, like I was like, just sit down. You're the biggest pretender ever. And no one likes you. Like your teammate. That's why you got traded. You know, no one likes you. So after that, yeah, at the end of the game, I was like, I saw an opportunity to just like grab him. And I was like, you know what? I got to drop my gloves and I hope he does because I got to punch him in the face. And I got to give him credit. He dropped his glove. That's good. I mean, and after that, I just wanted to I don't want to say hurt him, but like at least he dropped his gloves.
So I didn't
expect for that, but it's just, you know, and yeah. And because like no one, it's hard to find partners now. Obviously there's a lot of tough guys in other side of the West and stuff. So I would like to try that out a little bit, but it's hard to find partners, you know, it's just not the same. And it's the way it is. Even against Washington, very physical team, like no one to do nothing with me, man.
On episode 10, Zach Rinaldo joined us and had a hilarious story about the first impression he made in his first development camp.
I'll never forget. I'm pretty sure it was your first development camp. And they actually changed the rule with the Flyers after that because, let me explain, Riles, you were playing.
Yeah.
So me and Riley go out, and we, of course, everyone wants to watch the scrimmage. No one's really caring about the practices and what you guys are going through. So me and Riles go stand out in the corner. Within 6 minutes, you had put 4 players out of commission. And I mean out of commission. And I remember me and Riley were talking about this yesterday. We were like, holy shit, you hit someone. One guy I know for sure. You probably remember who all of them were. But you hit 2 guys, probably 2 shifts in a row. They literally carried him off the ice.
Yeah.
You caught someone coming around the back of the neck like 2 shifts later. And we're just sitting there going, this kid can hit, man. Mm. And David Laliberte tried to grab you because he didn't know what to do. Like you hit another guy. You literally took 3 players out, not in a dirty way either. I mean, they were clean ass hits, hard, clean hits. And I think we can get into it later, but I think a lot of times you've gotten kicked out of games where you shouldn't have because you hit so damn hard. And that's why I say you're like a shark. We used to say, even Chief would, Craig Berube would say, it's like a shark, man.
Yep.
Like it's a talent to be able to catch guys. Nowadays, with the league, you hit a guy too hard, the arm goes up just because their head flies and you hit them right in the chest. But anyway, back to the story. Poor Lally comes and grabs you because he doesn't know what the hell to do. I don't even know if the guy had ever been in a fight. And you one punch like the poor bastard. And I love David. I haven't talked to him in years. What a good kid. You catch him right in the chin. He goes down. And me and Riles are like, oh, my God. Like, this guy's a wrecking ball. So we go back in. You had to come off because you kind of hurt your hand, I guess, when you hit him. And I'll never forget, him and I are sitting in my office, and you came down the hallway. You had your hand iced up. And, you know, I barely knew you. It's your first camp, Riley. And you were like, hey, Cote, that was for you, man. And we were like, I was like, I love this guy, man. Yeah. And then Riles was dying. And then sure enough, obviously we get to know you, but it was a hell of a first impression. Oh, and yeah, they stopped the scrimmages after that. We didn't have scrimmages for since then that I can remember like that. They did 3-on-3 stuff, 3-on-3 games instead of a 5-on-5 because of you, which, hey man, heads up boys.
Yeah. Right.
You know? I mean, God, thank God. If you hit me that hard, I'd probably be dead. But at least the guys weren't dead.
They told me before the scrimmage not to hit, like not to like fucking kill people. Jeez. And I thought to myself, I said, that's not hockey.
Right.
I'm not gonna not hit. Like I'm here to make the team. Right. That's what I want to do.
Right.
And I didn't care what anyone told me, so I kind of made a point to hit a little harder. Just to prove, but kind of put it in their face, like, no, this is what I'm here for. I'm not here to pussyfoot around. This is what I'm here for. I make the team. And yeah, they stopped the scrimmages after that.
I remember Mr. Holmgren coming down and he said, let me guess who your favorite player is now. I'm like, yeah,
pretty easy there, yeah, man. Right. You know, but again, they were clean hit. It wasn't like you elbowed someone in the head. No, they were just honest to God hits to the chest, guys with their heads down. I mean, after the first hit, if I'm playing in that scrimmage, I'm looking around to see where 63 is. I think that was the first number you had. It may have been something else your very first year, but I would have been looking for you.
Like that's was it 60? Like,
oh, no, yeah.
Like the, that's how it was. The scrimmage is like 11, 12 years ago. It was kill or be killed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Like I was prepared to fight every single shift because that back then, that's how you like – yep. made an impression. Even if you weren't a tough guy, you had to go to camp and at least fight once just to prove like, hey, I can handle grown men. Right. So that's how it was. It was a kill or be killed atmosphere. And to me, I wasn't a high draft pick. So I had to go and had that have that mindset. So that's what I did.
Chris Versteeg joined us on episode 20, where he talked about how good that 2011 team was, and a good story about a couple Russians that were on that team.
That team is so good, man, though.
Yeah, that was a good team, man. We talked about that before. I don't remember who was on. It was Beast, because Prongs got hurt. If he hadn't got hurt, I mean, you never know. You always say what if, but you're right. It was a good team. It was a really good team. I posted that thing today where we scared you.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
The old stick bag?
He hadn't been there long. I guess he'd been there about a week. So I was like, I gotta get this little.
Ottawa or Tampa?
We were in Ottawa. We were in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And that when we got you. But it's funny that I turned the camera and you see Jeff Carter, Palsy Poo, Daryl Powell.
Oh, yeah.
And Zhirinov, Carbom. I'm just like, God, I was looking at it today. I've seen that thing 100 times, but I was like, geez, what a team. That was actually a really good team, man.
Oh yeah, Zhirinov was my roommate.
Oh boy, how was that? You had to have a roommate then? Was the rule not there? So many games.
It was the year after was the lockout. About a year and a half later.
Oh okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember he smoked though. Yeah, yeah.
Turned
the fan on and
cigarettes.
Cigarettes, yeah. He'd turn the fan on in the bathroom and have a cigarette.
Well. You know what else, Steger, I meant to say about our nights in the spring was Johnny, our driver, our buddy, good man. See him every once in a while, not very often, but I saw him about 2 months ago, I think. I think it was about 2 months ago, but he ended up taking over. He started taking care of Zhirinov. Is that how you met him, actually? Maybe that's how you met him.
So this is how I met him. Zhirinov didn't want to drive, and Bobrovsky didn't want to drive. So they hired John to drive him around.
Yeah.
And John ended up after that, I needed to keep going to the hospital to get checkup and a drink. And I didn't have a vehicle at that point because I sent it home. I think my girlfriend took it. She was my girlfriend at the time, wife now. She took it home. And he started driving me around and I got really close with him. And then he got sick, I believe.
Yeah, he had a stroke.
He had a stroke?
Yeah, man.
And so I was like, oh boy. That's not good, but I haven't talked to him in a few years, but that guy, man, I remember one night I got home and it was like, we got home, sorry, at like three.
Yeah.
And, I come outside and I'm like, okay, I got to get something to eat. So me and Brody, my friend who was staying with me, we go get something to eat. We come back, it's 8 a.m. and Johnny's sitting there in the parking lot with Bobrovsky. And Zhirinov, they're just sitting there. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, we're just hanging out. I'm like, have you guys gone to bed yet? They're like, no, we've just been sitting here the last like 4 hours. I'm like, so John is sleeping now. Cause
that's what he did. Yeah.
He just drove. So, I mean, amazing guy. I always worry about him since he had a stroke.
Yeah.
And I think his daughter ended up driving for a little bit from what I heard, but I haven't talked to him in a few years, but man, Johnny, he is the funniest guy.
He was awesome, man.
Oh.
I don't know if you ever got to meet him, Riles.
I've heard stories.
I got a couple good ones that we won't say today because it's family friendly. But I got some, and you know how you get all wound up, Steger. In his voice. Oh my God.
He's Greek, right?
You can't understand. He's talking so fast. And, oh my God, don't do that in here. And oh boy,
This man saw more stuff. He saw more shit going on than a lot of people did.
Was that the same driver as Kyle Calder? Same driver that have him ripping around all the time?
No, I don't think so. No, he wasn't around.
Crazy
yet.
Stories. Yeah.
Oh, Greece. There's another one. He was a beauty. Oh boy.
I don't know who he drove before. I just knew he started with Zverev. But I know when Zverev left, he left all his stuff. Hey,
everything.
And so Johnny got it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He put it in another storage unit or something. He kept asking me, "What do I do?" I'm like, "Dude, he's not coming back. Like, sell it or something, because he's not coming back. You're paying money to store his stuff."
He left shoes, like expensive shoes. He left belts. He said he left couches. And so Johnny put it in, and he was always asking. He said Jared was always like, "I'm going to come back and get it." And I don't think he ever came back to get any of it. It was like a full house worth of stuff.
Wow. Oh yeah. Yeah, he did. Cause his daughter wanted the shoes. Cause the wife had like 50 pair of shoes, like brand new in boxes, expensive shoes, man. But Johnny was so afraid. He might come back. I'm like, he ain't coming back, bro. Like, this guy's not coming back.
We couldn't let Richie go before he told us the story of him, Nasty, Chemo, and Prongs at the Olympics.
Going back to the Olympics for a second, I think, is that where you met Dewey Doughty?
Yeah.
I remember you guys kind of hanging with each other a little bit.
Yeah, that's where I met him. I met him at the summer camp.
Oh, okay.
For the Olympics. But yeah, that was a riot there.
Yeah. So I had a few nights where I'm not going to lie to you. I may not remember exactly what I was doing. I didn't get arrested, so that's always a good thing. I'll never forget, you guys beat USA. I wasn't playing, obviously.
Yeah.
What a game. Zach Parise ties it. I went from the highest I've ever been. Then Sid's got a Barry one, of course, the golden goal. But I remember after the game, going, saying hey to you, giving you a hug and everything. And you were like, "Hey, like, I'll message you if you want to come." I'm like, "Well, I got to go with my team." Yeah. Those guys that just lost, but we actually, you talk about, like, it was about, those guys were, they were guys crying. Obviously devastated. Yeah. That was probably the closest since the 80. Well, definitely had to be the closest since 80 of USA hockey. Yeah. And, I thought, and we had beat you guys in the regular round there, whatever you want to call it, the round robin. We had won. And I just remember being on the bench and Richie, I know you've been there as a player, Riley, you too, but you guys were up, but the guys kept "We're gonna get one. We got one," and I've got a great picture of me. I'm like jumped up, of course, because how like low key I am.
Yeah,
I'm jumped up, and Quickie had jumped up too, and he wasn't dressed, but he was standing behind me at the sticks, and he landed on me, and he's not a small man.
No,
he landed on me at one point, and I kind of fell, and all the boys are jumping up and down, and I got my hands on the ground, and I'm trying to hold my hands, but I'm like, I just want to watch, see what's going on. But anyway, after the game, you and I talked for a couple minutes, and obviously you're going to have some fun with the boys. And speaking of Chris Pronger, Prongs comes over to me in the hallway. Now, he had his whole family there, so he's going right to his room. We had a 7 a.m. flight, Mr. Snyder's jet. Chemo was going to be on it, and you and Prongs and myself. I don't know if I'm missing anyone. I think Oscar Spartulis had left because he was there. Point of my story was Prongs comes and grabs me, and I'm still kind of down a little bit. And I'm like, he's like, "Hey, fool," because that's what he always called me. I'm like, "What's up, man?" I'm like, "What's up, beast?" He goes, "Listen, I want to make sure you and Richie are on that plane, on time." And I'm like, "All right, like." Really? You just want a gold fart? You just want a gold medal, bro? Kind of like laughing. He was like, "No, I'm serious, because I know all you guys are going out, and you should. Got to enjoy it. I got the family here. I got to go." I'm like, "All right, beast. Gotcha. So it's like 2 a.m, and he's texting me, "Make sure you and Rick Bone, you and Richie are there. I ain't worried about Chemo, because Chemo had his parents, his family, sorry." And so like, all right, so. I get back to the hotel. I get my stuff together. So I had been keeping in touch with Richie all, about every hour, So it's getting to be about 5:30 now. I'm getting a little nervous, like, where's my phone? So I'm texting, no answer. So I called your phone probably five times now, and it's like, we needed to leave around 6 to get to the airport, right?
Yeah.
So Riggs, you'll enjoy this last part, but it's like 5:45, 6-7 phone calls. Finally, he answers, and it's like 6:05, and he answers like this: "Hey, bro, what's up?" I'm like, dude, where are you? I'm like, Prongs has called me 10 times. We're supposed to be at the airport in an hour. Where are you? And he's like, hey, where are we? And I said, give that person a phone. So he hands the phone over, and I'm like, hey, listen, this is life or death. Because we had asked Mr. Holmgren to back the flight up because we were flying to Tampa. I mean, it would only make sense. Like, my God, you're playing the gold medal game. But anyway, Prongs is he's calling me, yelling at me. I feel like my dad's on the phone with me, yelling at me. And so Richie gets back. I said, 911, get this man in a cab. I got to meet him. He gets back. I'm like, did you pack? Not yet. And then I'm like, where's your gold medal? My mom's got it. Okay. All right. So anyway, the funny part is Riles, of course, I was shitting my pants because I did not want us to be late. One, because of the beast, Prongs, but Homer too. Homer was adamant about us not being late. So we get to the plane. We actually, Kimo waited on us and let us jump in his big van.
Yeah.
We get there, no Prongs.
No way.
So we're dying. It's like 7:10. And we're just like, me and Rick Boner kind of laughing, and Kimo, he's so funny. He kept making little comments. So finally Beast comes flying up in his limo or whatever. He's got the boys with him, his wife, and they get on the plane and they're jumping around thing. And me and Richie just want to go to bed. Richie's got the old iCar, whatever you call those things. But Prongs gets on, and I'm like, yo, Beast, what's up, man? We've been here like 45 minutes. He's like, this guy got fucking lost. He's losing it. If that would have been us, dude, they would have taken off. No. He would have taken off.
He would have left. He would have left.
Richie, you better get on the horn, get us a private PJ going here. But I thought that was so funny because Prongs ended up being late instead of us.
Oh, yeah.
And last but not least, the captain finishes us off. G tells a few funny stories about his competitive side.
Sometimes things snowball and then you're trying too hard, almost like people like, how can you try too hard? But you know what I mean? When you say you try, everyone's just trying so hard. And it was so many expectations, like you said, after last year, and I just couldn't get rolling. And the COVID thing, I didn't think it was fair, not to give you guys excuses. You guys never made an excuse, but I didn't think it was fair that you ended up playing a lot of games with not just two guys out, 6 guys out. I didn't think that was fair. I thought saw a lot of teams get their games canceled, more games than you guys did anyway, but it's still just such a shit show. From the bubble was hard. You guys are away from your family. And this year you're kind of in a bubble basically on the road, 'cause you can't really do anything. Did that come into play at all, you think, with I know everybody has to.
Well, everybody's got pretty much the same schedule, but, you play 7 games in like 12 days. You're just like, there's no recovery. You can't take care of your body as well. It's kind of messed up. And I think just like you said, is like when you lose one, you lose two, and then you try to work a little harder, try to do a little much and try to force it. And then it gets worse and worse and you can't get out of it. So, one example is 1 year I didn't score the start of the season for I think it was 18 games, and Paul Holmgren called me in his office and told me, "Gee, you're working too hard. Stop working too hard." And I look and I'm like, what the hell do you want me to do? You want me to stop working? He's like, yeah, work less. It's going to work. Just relax. Like you're going way too hard. And I got out of that meeting more confused than before. I kind of just relax and went well after that.
Well, that's you though. Like that's what I mean. You're such a competitor. I mean, with anything, I've been around you a long time, and I've been fortunate enough to know you since you're a young kid. And
you're a competitive guy, man. I mean, you think you could beat anyone in arm wrestling. And I've seen you beat I've seen you beat guys you shouldn't beat, actually. So I'm not gonna say anything about it because you usually but you know, that's one of the great things about you and you being a captain and such a good captain is, you know, it's not always about the loudest guy, but I feel like being around you for so long, I really don't think I've ever seen you take a night off of a game and even practice. You practice hard too, but that's something that a lot of people can't say, but I know how competitive you are, and you know, you get wound up, you know, when things aren't going well, and you should. I love that about you. And you know, I know
I remember we're playing at home, and like we're known to like give it to the refs a little bit, and you know, as captain, I had to tell the boys, let's stop yelling at the refs. And I'm probably one of the worst, to be honest, but I try to like calm down so everybody calms down. And then this one game, remember, I told the guys, just everybody relax. Just don't yell at the refs. Like, I'll go talk to them. Let's not yell from the bench. And then the ref does something, and all I hear is Nasty behind me. Starts yelling at the ref and give it to him. Right. And I turn around, and I'm like, Nasty, shut up. And he was you were so mad at me for the rest of the game. You wouldn't talk to me. And then I'm like, maybe I should have like not yell at him, just like tell him.
We
go back to the bench, go back to the room after the game we won. And we just looked at each other and we just started laughing. And
He was right though. And he did say that a lot, boys, leave the refs alone. But one of my favorites was a couple of years ago with G, and I busted out laughing. Because they went to video review, and Hack was the coach, Dave Hackstall. And Hack says, all right, boys, kind of the guys are around the bench. And he's like, all right, boys, whatever happens here, just stay calm. If it's a goal, we're good. If it's not, just stay calm. And it's like none of the guys are talking. And G jumps over the boards and goes, if they don't call this goal, I'm going to fucking lose it. Just kidding. And I started fucking dying, and Hack just put his head down, started laughing. I said, holy fuck. But G, you're known a little bit. You chirp a little bit. I don't know if people know, but that's another thing I love about
you. Yeah, you got to
like talk. Chirps. One of my favorites was we were talking about was when you came back from the concussion, God, way back, I think 2012 was, I think it was here we had Yogs. And anyway, you're taking a face off with Otter. Remember you'd miss a bunch of games and you had a hell of a game. I think you had 4 points that game. You're coming back from a concussion and they're getting ready to take the face off and they're mic'd because the HBO was following the team around, following us around. And G says, are you taking this face off? And Otter right away, you know, he's a chirper. He's like, I'm fifth in the league. You're a good player, but I'm a good player too. And G said, I didn't say you weren't a good player. He says, I'm fifth in the league. I'm going to win this thing straight back. They drop it, G, just right back clean to the win. D. I can't remember who's on there. Oh, just right back. Fuck, I laughed my ass off. And it was good because it was really like
tripping, that's just,
no, I know. It was true. Yeah, it was funny, though. But you got him wound up so much from that.
I knew it was mic'd up. So I'm like, I got to win this one.
Yeah, you got to win it. And then he was so wound up. He remember, he went after Labby. Yeah, Labby, like, it was that, the whole thing. It was kind of funny, but.
Yeah.
And awesome. I was glad that was your mic for that, so people could hear a little bit of it.
Yeah.